The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cost Pain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 257. I hope you're doing well, and I want to thank you for checking out this episode. And boy, is it going to be a fun one, because I am joined by two talented actresses who are making waves in the film industry. I'm referring to Liz Priestley and Shannon Wilson. Now, Liz Priestley has just wrapped up her first major film role, playing Idris Elba's wife in an upcoming movie called Concrete Cowboy. That movie just got picked up by Netflix and will be released in the near future through that streaming service, so that's great news. At the time that Liz and I spoke, that deal was not finalized, and so we did not really talk too much in great detail about distribution. But nonetheless, Concrete Cowboy coming to Netflix. We talk all about the making of that film. Liz shares some stories about working with Caleb McLaughlin and Idris Elba. We also cover her musical and her stage background. And, she's just got a great personality. It's so much fun to talk to her. And the second conversation that I'm going to have on this episode is with actress Shannon Wilson. She plays Claire in a riveting drama called Snow Babies, which focuses on the opioid issue in America and the impact that it has on families. She is also going to be appearing in an upcoming Netflix series called Halston. I believe Ewan McGregor has been tapped as being the lead in that project as well. So we talk all about that, and again, Shannon's also a very fun individual to chat with. We talk about her writing a book called The Littlest Peanut, her role on Elementary, which has a very funny Johnny Lee Miller story to it. We even talk a little bit about some sports, too. So before I get to my conversations with Liz and Shannon, I need to let you know about a great sponsor of the PVD Cast, and that is, of course, World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era, whether you're talking the golden era, silver era, bronze, or even the modern era. They also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, posters, and one massive collection of back issues. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff or the other fine folks at World's Greatest. Or you can check them out online at wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Just look for at wgcomics on Facebook, and you're sure to find their page. And if you interact with them, either in person or through the internet, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's get on into it. On the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Liz Priestley and Shannon Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, joining me on the line here for this episode of the PVD Cast, I'm joined by Liz Priestley. Liz, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing very good. You have a huge movie that's coming up here that we want to talk about because I have so many questions about it. What I'd like to do is start at the beginning, if I could.
Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Abington, Pennsylvania, which is a little suburb right outside of Philadelphia. And you have to say that because you can't claim Philadelphia if you're not from Philadelphia. They will come after you. But Yeah, so I'm technically a Philadelphia suburbanite.
Okay, okay. Did you come from a very large family, like a lot of siblings or?
Yeah, I have, well, I have five sisters, so, you know, in a house full of girls, and I'm the fourth out of six. So, you know, it's a loud household, and we all are actually, well, we all were musicians. They all played instruments, including myself. So yeah, very loud house for sure. My older string instruments, I played the violin, and we played in our own like string quartet for a little while. We did some weddings and stuff like that. So it was a good time.
So with all your siblings, you kind of had your own makeshift band then already, right out of it, right out of the gates.
Yeah. Yeah, in a way. I mean, certainly I think it changed from day to day. They were a band one day, and then they were part of like some play that I had written the next day. And then the day after that, they were an audience member. And then the day after that, we were like putting on our own circus. I mean, you know, we had a good time.
If I may ask, with the love of music, was that something that was like kind of your parents urging you like, hey, maybe you should try the violin? Or was that something that you all just were like, yeah, let's try this, let's do this? Or was it a little bit of both?
Nailed it. no, it was definitely, you know, it was like, I was four when I started playing violin. And so they... I do remember kind of like my mom being like, oh, you know what Susan does? And do you want to do what she does? And I was like, yeah, because Susan was a violinist. So yeah, kind of started with that. And then, you know, as I went on, I kind of was like, oh, I don't know if I really want to play anymore. And my mom's like, no, you're definitely going to play. Yeah, you're definitely going to keep doing this. I'm glad she pushed me. At the time, I wasn't so happy about it. But now I'm like, you know, I'm glad that we went that route. And then in high school, so I mean, I played violin altogether for about 18-ish years in there. I still play. I just, you know, it would take me a few minutes to really get a song going now. But I in high school, I kind of knew around then, like, violin's not really what I want to do. And my mom was like, well, you got to find something else, something musical. You've got talent here. And that's when I started singing, not thinking that I'd be any good at that. But then that's where that started. And, you know, I kept up with all of that. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, a combination of my parents recognizing like, hey, you've got some skills here. That's rare. Let's keep going with that. We don't want to lose that. You know what I mean? So yeah, a little bit.
So your love of singing, is that pretty much what got you into acting as well? Because you had the musical background, you were singing, you were like, what the heck? Let's try the acting aspect to it.
You know, you'd think they'd be connected, but they didn't connect for me until college. And that was a compromise. I knew that I wanted to be the girl that made movies specifically since I was about seven. And that was separate from everything else. I just was like, who's making these movies I like to watch? I want to do that. They get to play pretend for a living? That's a job? I want to do that, you know? The other stuff, you know, were my hobbies, but I would say acting was always, you know, my passion, even as a kid, you know, writing plays, performing stuff, putting on a show or whatever. That's where I was, you know, most at home. And then, yeah, I mean, I think my parents definitely really wanted me to go the music route because, again, I think in some ways it's like when you have the talent for that, it's very like, you know, don't let that go. That's rare. Keep going with that. But then at the same time, I knew what I wanted to do. So when I got to college, I said, well, let's do musical theater so that way I can get all the training. And that way also too, I can use that to get my foot in the door to film. But, you know, even when I was in college, my favorite classes, besides an audition class that I've talked about before on other podcasts, were daytime TV acting, otherwise known as soap opera acting, and film, like TV acting. And those were you couldn't take them until you were a senior. And I was just chomping at the bit to get to them, you know, because I was like, finally, I get to be in front of a camera. Like, this is it, you know. So that was always from when I was a kid, yeah.
I like that there was a class just on soap opera acting. I'm curious, what did they teach you in that class specifically that is different from all your other acting classes? Like, my mind is blown by that.
I remember hearing about it and being like, what is that? So, I mean, you have to remember this was when, you know, soaps were still huge. Not like now where I don't even know which ones are still on, to be honest with you. But yeah, I was like, I mean, they were back in the day. It was like, that was like a thing. My family, my parents watched, you know, the CBS soaps. Every day, and at dinner we would get like the recap. Like, it was a big thing. So that actually was part of why I was excited to take it, is because I grew up watching and hearing about these characters. And then I went to Ithaca College, and we have quite a few alumni who ended up directing soap operas. Like, they made it big in the soap world. So a few of them would come back and teach the class. They would do, you would have like a scene from a soap, you get partnered up. And it was a combination class between actors and students that were in the directing school. So you would be assigned a scene with someone, and you would also be assigned a director, and you would have to meet with them during the week so that they could stage it how they wanted it. And the director would have to write out how the shots were done and everything. And then on the day you would show up and, you know, you would shoot the scene and we would film it. And we had videotapes. This is how far back I'm going. We had videotapes where we had to upload our clips to the videotapes. And the idea was that after we graduated, we could hand the tape to, you know, like, here's a sample of my work, which I never ended up using, but it was a cool idea. But I mean, we had like a director from The Guiding Light, which was my favorite soap opera, come on and direct a scene. And I got to be in one of the scenes he directed. And he told me afterwards, he was like, hey, you know, after you graduate, if you ever want to go this route, you have a future in here. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. You know, sounds weird now, but I would totally do it.
So they kind of just basically it was kind of just prepping you for like working on a set more so than maybe other. That was kind of the gist of the acting.
Yeah, we would rotate responsibilities. So 1 week you would be acting, but the next week you would be running the big, I mean, huge. We had these big, huge cameras. So you would, you know, practice moving the camera in and out. You could be on the boom. You could be in the booth doing sound. We had a Chiron generator so we could put like names up on the thing. And again, the idea was anything that you could do to get your foot in the door. So if you production assistant on a show because you knew how to work the light board or whatever, you know, that was cool. So I do know how to work those big giant cameras that have to swing into place and all that kind of stuff. It was fun.
You said you went to Ithaca College, correct?
Ithaca, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that Rod Serling's alma mater?
Yeah, I think it is. Oh my goodness, yeah, I think it is. Wow. Most people, when I say Ithaca College, you know what they ask me? It's one of two things. It's either is that where David Boreanaz went? And he did, but he was like I think he was like a TV major, so he wasn't in the acting program. Or they'll say, isn't that the movie from Road Trip? And I'm like, that's Ithaca University, which doesn't exist.
I did not know either one of those facts. I've never seen Road Trip, and I did not know that David Boreanaz
went there. Oh, you're lucky. I've seen it once. That was enough.
Okay.
That was enough.
All right. Well, can I ask, as an aspiring actress or actor, when you're getting into the biz, who were some of the influences you looked towards to kind of hone your craft?
Oh, man. So I'm an old school like movie buff. I was that weird kid that would like, I'm talking at like 3, 4, 5 years old. Not maybe not three. So like 4, 5, 6 years old. I'll age me up a little. Would sneak downstairs in the middle of the night, like 3, 4 in the morning, and watch Gone with the Wind. And then my parents would come down for work at like 7 a.m. and I'd be sitting on the couch like enthralled. I love old like black and white movies. I was a huge fan of Vivian Leigh, Betty Davis, Clark Gable. I'm a huge Marilyn Monroe fan, obviously. I love Dorothy Dandridge. I love Dorothy Dandridge and Lena Horne. But everything that I have watched, really, I mean, this is going to sound so ridiculous. I have found something that I can remember that inspired me about something. I mean, you know, I watched like old cop shows with my dad, like NYPD Blue, and I just thought it was the coolest thing. And like, I'm a huge Viola Davis fan, obviously. So she's someone that, oh my goodness, probably ever since high school, I have people coming up to me all the time being like, you know who you look like? You look like that actress. You know who I'm talking about? You know, the one who was like on How to Get Away with Murder. She was in Fences with Denzel. You know who I'm talking about? I'm like, Viola Davis. Yeah, girl, you look like, and I'm like, yeah, I know. I get that a lot. And I love her. I followed her career from way back when she was, you know, guesting as a lawyer on Law and Order SVU back in the day, you know. But I love movies. I love them. And I watch as many as I can. And I love different people from different eras for different reasons. I mean, really, like I was just watching To Sir with Love the other day with Sidney Poitier. And I just was like, like, well, oh.
Well, let's talk
I'm that
about
nerd. You can't be nothing. Like, what's your favorite actor?
No, you are A-okay. I respect that. I respect that you're the old movie nerd. I like that. Let's talk about one of the first roles you had. There was a small independent film called Faithful, in which you had a role in. Could you tell the folks a little bit about that film project?
Yeah, Faithful is, I love that it's up on my IMDb. I really do, because it's technically a short film that was done. It's a student film from a student who was at Temple University. And in Philadelphia, you have a lot of opportunity. There's a few film schools out here, including at Temple. And you have the opportunity to audition for their projects because they always need, you know, actors. So, yeah, like a couple of years ago, I was thinking, you know, if I'm going to try to make them, you know, move being like a movie actress, I probably should get some film credits on here. So I auditioned for a student film at Temple University and I got cast. And it's about a husband and wife that are like having some miscommunication issues. And there's like a night they have an argument and the wife decides to go out with her best friend to a bar and she doesn't really come home. So the husband is like, where are you at? What are you doing? Who are you with? Kind of thing. But I play, you know, the friend that, you know, calls him up from the bar and she's like, yeah, she's having a real good time. I know you wish you were here, but oh, well, we busy, bye. You know, like I'm that friend. And it was so funny because I never get to play parts like that. So I had a field day, but that's what the film is. I don't even know where it's available. I hope it's available somewhere. But yeah, it was a Temple student film. So technically, yes, that is my first on-camera experience outside of a classroom.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about your major film debut. You have a role in the upcoming movie, Concrete Cowboy, where you play Idris Elba's wife. Could you give a short summary of the plot?
It's a father-son story. And, you know, I play this mom who's at the end of her rope with her son, who's acting up, just getting in trouble, getting kicked out of schools and all that. So I'm like, you know what? I've done all I can. It's time to take you to your father and have you be his problem now. But he's never met his father. So I drive him in the middle of the night from Detroit to Philadelphia and I dump him on his father's doorstep. So it's a father-son story of, you know, this boy learning who this man is that he's never known for 15 years. It also happens to be that his father is the leader of this group of black cowboys in the middle of Philadelphia. And it's this story set against this historic backdrop of this world that a lot of people don't know about. And it's a true world that actually exists, which I didn't know until I got cast for this movie. but that's the basic plot of the movie. It's learning about who his father is and this world that he lives in, this world that he comes from, and how that all kind of connects.
And it has a very talented cast, but I do have to ask about two individuals because I'm a huge nerd when it comes to The Wire. The fact that there's two alumni in this film, I gotta ask, do you have any cool stories about Idris Elba?
I've got a few. I mean, gosh, it's like, okay. So first of all, you know, in a movie like this, or really any movie, if you're playing somebody's like spouse or whatever, we would have a chemistry read at some point in the auditions where we would meet. They would make sure we look good together. He's not too tall or whatever. That never happened. I didn't meet anyone from the cast until the day I showed up on set. So it was like, I got there, I turned the corner. There's Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things. He's playing my son in the movie. So he turned the corner, there he is. Mom! And I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so then, and 10 seconds we got to talk before they put us on a horse together. And when you have two people on a horse, the bigger person goes in the back. So that's me. So I have to hold on to like, hey, hi, just met you 10 seconds ago. I'm gonna hold you around the waist. Sorry, you know? So there's that. And then they put us on a horse and they pull up our horse next to another horse. And I turn to my right and they're just a foot away from me. There's Idris Elba just smiling at me. And I'm not even ashamed to say this. I almost peed my pants. I was like, huh. And I looked at him and I was so flustered. And I looked at him and I was like, hello, husband. And he goes, hello, wife. And I was just like, oh my God, what? he was so funny and he's so sweet. He said to me, so we had one day where it was like my big scene with him, and we're between shots and there's some downtime, and I'm like, I'll never forgive myself if I don't go over there and talk to him. So I go and we're chit-chatting for about 20 minutes, and he said to me, he's like, well, what else would I know you from? What else have you been in? And I'm like, oh no, this is it. Like, this is my debut. And he was like, really? I get to be in your film debut. And I was just like, what? Like, sir, are you kidding? Like, I just thought that was so sweet and so nice. And, you know, I said to him, I was like, oh, you're so impressive. You're an actor, you're a DJ, and you're a rapper now. And he was like, I was like, no, I heard your song. I was listening to it on the way down to set today. I've heard your song. And he goes, really? And then I proceeded to rap his song to him. I don't know if you could tell by my voice, I'm not a rapper at all. And he laughed in my face and I didn't even care. I was like, whatever, I rapped it. I did it. I can die happy now, you know?
I was just going to segue, speaking of rap and another alumni of The Wire, Method Man is in the movie. And what was it like to work with Method Man? Did you have a lot of screen time with him?
I had no screen time with him. But I'll tell you, my funny story with Method Man is, so my first day on the set, and you have to understand. So again, it's my first film. I've just met Idris Elba. I've just been on a horse for the second time in my entire life. And I've just hung out with Caleb McLaughlin for several hours. I've just come from a trailer that has my name on it. Like, it's the most surreal thing. And I'm walking back to my car and certain people are stopping me saying, hey, how you doing? This guy comes up to me. Hey, how's it going? We chatted for 20 minutes. And then I got back to my car, and then realized that that was Method Man. I did not recognize him in the moment. I did not say anything to him in the moment. I missed my opportunity to fangirl out over him in the moment because it was like, this is a nice guy. Hello. Like, I had no clue. And he was probably too gracious to be like, do you know who I am? You know, but yeah, I totally was like, oh, that was Method Man. Mm-hmm. But he was very nice. Yep, classic Liz.
That's okay. I mean, maybe during the premiere, you'll get to talk to him some more, you know?
I hope so, because I'm going to be like, we talked. I'm so sorry. you know, but yeah, everyone was really very nice, very kind to me as kind of the noob on this. I mean, really, it was just like, what am I even doing here? You know, and I know there were more than a few people there that had the same thought, because my big scene with Idris was shot outside in the heart of North Philly. So just off camera in our scene, whenever it comes out, is about 150 women just massed together, just trying to get a glimpse of the man himself, just right out the frame. And every time we would have to reset and do the scene over, and I'd be walking back to my starting position, you could just hear, who is that? Who is that? I don't recognize her. Who is that? Who is that girl? Why does she get to hug Idris? Who is that? You know what I mean? And I'm just like, yep. Couldn't agree more. Who am I? Who am I, ladies? I don't know. Who am I? You know? Surreal. This is very surreal.
Liz, that is an amazing story. I'm just saying, I cannot. I cannot even stop laughing right now.
It's just like, you know, you're walking back and no one's standing with you, and they're all just kind of looking at you out of frame like this. And you're like, okay. My first day, actually, when I showed up to the set, I had a good long talk with the security guard because they didn't know who I was, and they thought I was just a woman in North Philadelphia pretending that I was in the film trying to get on the set. So I said, hi, I'm here to be in the movie. They said, sure you are, sweetie. Please go around to where the holding. I was like, no, really, I'm in the movie. Ma'am, I'm going to have to ask you to please remove yourself from the premises. I was like, oh my God, no, please. I'm like, please call like a PA. Please call someone. Like, I'm legit supposed to be here. And they were like, oh, okay, yeah, you're not. Okay, yeah, you can come with us.
Oh my.
They were doing their jobs. No worries. They were doing their job.
I literally had tears in my eyes after that story. That was, oh my goodness. Well, let's talk about the movie some more in terms of when it's still kind of in post-production right now. So there's still some question as to when it might come out. But do you have an idea, maybe?
It debuted already at the Toronto Film Festival. So it's not in post. It's good. Okay. It debuted so about a month ago now. And for about 2 weeks, I read every review I could get my hands on. From what I was reading, it did quite well. People were very moved by it. So now we're looking at an actual worldwide release date is where we are.
Okay. All right. And we'll talk about this in a little bit. Obviously, your social media and whatnot will be the best place to find out when that movie is out in theaters or streaming or however it's going to be distributed. So, and we'll get to those in a few minutes because I still have one more question for you, Liz.
Yes.
So you've done, obviously, a movie now, and you have done some television commercial work from what I researched, and you've also done stage. What's the different skill set that you have to use among those three?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. It's the same skill set in terms of preparation, no matter what you're doing. You know, you got to do your homework. You got to make sure you know what you're doing, where you're supposed to be, whatever. It doesn't matter if it's a commercial, you know, I did a commercial where we're sitting at a hibachi restaurant. It's like, I still need to know who I am, why I'm there, and what I'm doing, who am I with, all that stuff. But in terms of the process, to me, at least now having done just the one film, it's a very long process. So for me, the skill involved is learning how to keep that same energy and be ready to go after 4 or 5 or 6 hours of sitting in your trailer waiting. Because at least on stage, it's like, you know, 7:30, curtain goes up and you're boom, you go until 9 o'clock or whatever, and then it's done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And until the next mm-hmm. night. On a film, it's like you show up at noon, but you're not getting in front of a camera until 4:30, 5 o'clock. So it then became about, you know, I got to be ready to go at 4:30, 5 o'clock. But in the meantime, what am I doing to keep my energy up, not exhaust myself, you know, all that kind of stuff. So you're really utilizing different skills in the sense that, like for me, I really just had to focus. And this is actually where, you know, the violin playing and the voice training and all of that really came in handy, because when you play an instrument, you have to learn discipline. You have to learn how to sit there and practice for multiple hours a day. With violin, I was up to about 6 hours a day practicing before I really kind of let that go. So for me, it was like falling back on those skills in a random way. Being, you know, sitting in my trailer, focused, listening to music, running my lines, you know, thinking about, you know, the circumstances before the scene I'm going to play, you know, and just kind of staying in the mindset without making myself tired. So it was, some days I think I was more successful, and other days I remember being like, I am tired. Wow, I'm tired. So, that was unusual. Like, I remember there was a night shoot we were doing, and we were like, I don't know, fourth or fifth take. And I was waiting for them to call action. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh my goodness, I am tired. And I was shocked by that, because, you know, I can do a play, 2 hour play, 3 hour play, and not feel winded until the very end. And also, like, to me, it's like film. This is what I wanted to do. I'm running on adrenaline. And I was like, I can't believe I'm tired. It is that, because you have to kind of learn how to conserve your energy and then give it and then take it back and wait for a few hours and then give it again. And then, you know, so that's where mm-hmm. the skill set differs, I think.
Okay. Well, Liz, let's talk about any upcoming projects, your social media, website, or anything where folks can keep tabs on you and your career.
So I have a pretty quiet existence at the moment. I'm writing some right now. I'm working on a web series and a screenplay. Thankfully, you know, that's been the one kind of hidden blessing with COVID and quarantine mm-hmm. is that I've had more time than ever to write material for myself. So be looking for those. And then as far as social media, again, I live a very quiet existence. I have a Facebook. You find me under Liz Priestley, and you probably also follow me on IMDb under Liz Priestley, but that's really it. I just, you know, I don't have like a, I'm too boring for like an Instagram and stuff. That'll probably change, but I'm just like, you know, I'd be taking pictures of like, I don't know, my coffee table and being like, happy Wednesday. Too boring.
You say that. Boring. You say that until you get like 125,000 likes for that picture of that table, that coffee table.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. My coffee table right now is pretty impressive, but that's because there's like a vase of flowers on it. But
well, Liz Priestley, thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Thanks for taking some time out of your schedule to sit down and chat.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
Thank you. All right. Well, you're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and I will be back to wrap up the episode. Before we move on to my next conversation, I need to let you know about World's Greatest Comics. They're a great sponsor of the PVD Cast, and they're also your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, posters, tons and tons of back issues. So if you need maybe an issue to finish your collection of Incredible Hulk, go see Jeff and the fine folks over at WG Comics, because I bet they have it somewhere in that giant vault of back issues. You can check out the store live in person by going over to 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, but you can also find them on the internet. Just look for their website, which is at wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Just again, look for at WG Comics. And if you interact with them either online or in the store, please let them know that you heard about World's Greatest Comics from yours truly right here on the PVD Cast. Ladies and gentlemen, sitting down with me this evening is an actress, an author, a songwriter. You wear lots of hats. I'm talking about Ms. Shannon Wilson. Shannon, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I know I just joked that you wear a lot of hats, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
When it's listed out like that, it sounds like I'm an overachiever here, but that's through a long period of time. I'm a doer of many things over a long period of time.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with that at all. Diversify yourself and your interests, and you'll never be a bored person.
That's true. If you're creative, you just find creative ways to creatively do things.
Exactly. Well, we're going to talk about several of your film projects and some other things as well. But I'd like to start off real quick. While doing research, I saw that you were born and raised in Texas, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Houston. See my Oilers in the football? Houston.
Oh, wow.
Signed by Bum Phillips, yes. And Earl Campbell's on here, too.
Whoa.
Born and raised in Houston, yes.
Wow. Okay, you got me on that one. I wasn't ready for that at all. I was not ready for that at all. Wow. Man, okay. So does that mean now you are a Texans fan or no?
Everybody always asks that. Yeah, I do love the Texans, but they're, what are they, like 1-6 right now? But yes, I have to root for the Texans, of course.
Okay. All right. The Astros as well?
Oh, yes, and that bums me out that they were cheating. Yes, but I have to root for them as well.
Do Astros fans have to put like that disclaimer, like the actions of the baseball team does not reflect
our personal character? Yes, I think that we do.
So growing up in Houston, I read where your father had fought in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Did his serving in the military, and especially in that conflict, did that kind of impact your family like it had done with many other families? You know, you hear the stories of those who came back from Vietnam had a very tough time, you know, adjusting back to life. Was that the situation in your family, or were you maybe one of the lucky ones that didn't have that?
My dad, he didn't have to go out in the jungle and fight in that way. He was in the army. But it affected him in different ways. He was a very quiet person and really passive, really sweet. He actually just passed away about 3.5 weeks ago.
I'm very sorry to hear
that's
that.
Okay. No, I love talking about him. And he was always really sweet and passive. But if you woke him up from a nap in any way, he would lunge at you and like grab at you almost, because he had PTSD in different ways. I mean, we didn't get a lot of information, as many of them don't want to talk about it, but he was in a place where they would bring, you know, the Vietnamese soldiers in and question them, kind of interrogation. Mm-hmm. So my dad wasn't part of the interrogation, but he kept record of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like, just almost by like being a typist or something, you know, he was there when that was happening. So, and I remember watching Platoon one time, and I said, "Oh my gosh, why are we all doing that to the Vietnamese, to the women and the children?" He's like, "You don't understand. You aren't there." And it was the first, you know, so rare to see my dad like that. He's like, "You have no idea what you're talking about," and he hated Jane Fonda. So there were just certain things that, you know, you saw that he never really expressed about. But yeah, I think it affected everybody in different ways.
Yeah, I really feel personally like the way in which we do not really give a lot of support to those veterans, it is really a crime, if you will, because having my own members of my family serve, you know, in the military, and sometimes, luckily for them, we were blessed that they could find a way to adjust and get back to to civilian life, but I know it's a struggle for many, many veterans.
Oh, especially when you're just such a, he was just, I can't even imagine him over there. You know, he's such a sweet guy. But he, and he ended up being in the VA for quite a few years. And so we would go visit him at the VA. He had a brain tumor. So he lived there for 2.5 years at the VA hospital in Houston, the Michael DeBakey VA hospital, which is fantastic and wonderful. The nursing staff and the doctors, can't say nothing about it. So they're so cute with their little hats, you know, the Vietnam vets, and wheeling around in their wheelchairs, some of them. And I'm just so proud of anybody that goes and fights for our country. Like, I'm super passionate about that.
So you wrote an inspirational kids book called The Littlest Peanut. What was the catalyst for writing this book?
I had two premature babies at separate times. So when I had my first, when I had my daughter, she was early. She was 6 weeks early. And sitting in the NICU with her, I would write poetry, just a way to express myself in the stress. So I put that away when I brought her home. And then 19 months later, my son comes at 30 weeks. I have another premature baby. It was crazy. And so I brought all of those poems and those ideas back. And baby books weren't matching what a parent wants to fill out in a regular baby book. Like, the milestones are totally different for a preemie as they are for a baby that's born a full term. And there were no baby books for preemies at the time when I wrote my book. So my brother-in-law illustrated it, and it's just a baby book like you would do for a baby, you know, but like, instead it's first time I changed his diaper, first time dad held him, first time, you know, he got off the CPAP for the, you know, oxygen. So that's where that came from.
How's the feedback been? Have you heard from other parents of saying, oh my gosh, thank you so very much for writing this book? How's that feedback been?
Well, it's my fourth edition.
So it's going well. The feedback's been good.
And we donate a lot of cases to hospitals and to NICUs. And there's one bad review on Amazon, Corgi Lover. She's so annoying to me because it's a really mean review. It's like a one star. And she said she doesn't have a visitor's page. But other than that, everything's been very positive. And then we hear all sorts of stories about, you know, from people who have preemies. I hear so many stories. You think you have a baby, it's going to be fine and easy, but it's not. It's not like that for everybody.
And both your children grew up to be A-okay and no health issues or anything?
No, they're 13 and 14, and they had little issues, little bumps along the way, but they had their physical therapy and different therapies, and you would never know that they were preemie. And NICU nurses are awesome. What they do every day is just phenomenal.
But they are teenagers, right? So are they getting into the teenage years?
I'm talking about the NICU nurses. No, my teenagers, I'm not saying they're phenomenal. NICU nurses are phenomenal. I'm not mincing words. Yeah, I didn't say mine were phenomenal.
Well, right after you had graduated college, you were a radio disc jockey for a while.
In college.
Oh, in college, you were a radio disc jockey. Okay. Mm-hmm. So music is a big part of your life?
Yeah, I love music. It's my Uncle Terry, who I just worshiped. He still plays music. He played with Eric Burton and the Animals and toured with them and, you know, just has been in the music industry out in LA for like 30 something years. So I always, you know, looked up to him for that and always liked going to concerts, and I play guitar and piano. So yeah, it's a way to express how I'm feeling.
So do you have a favorite genre of music?
I really love country music. Makes me really happy. I love old school hip hop, like the Geto Boys. I really do like, I love that. And rock, Led Zeppelin's one of my favorite bands. So it's kind of runs the gamut. Okay. Dolly Parton's my hero. I love her.
All right. Why is she your hero?
She's so smart, and she navigated the music industry as a woman, but not without, hey, I'm a woman. She doesn't put anything in your face. She just, she was so poor. I mean, she just, what she did with her life and what she does for other people and how she gives back. She does it all so humble, in such a humble way. Love her.
Okay. Why did you decide to become a DJ? Just because of the love of music, or were you like a communications major in college?
Yeah, I was a radio television major. KSAU 90.1. And it was from 10 to 12. And my sister, she's 6 years younger than me. She married a guy from Nacogdoches, which is where I went to college, in this little town called Nacogdoches, Texas. because my SAT scores were so bad on my math portion that I couldn't get into University of Texas. So I ended up at Stephen F. Austin in Nacogdoches. You know, when we were kids, you got one chance at the SAT. There was no tutoring.
Yeah, no, like, I know.
Well, that's what you got.
Yeah. Yeah, I side note, I did decent on ACTs, but I was horrible at the SATs. So
yeah, the ACTs I did good on too, but they didn't look at those then. Now they do.
Yeah, I know. I know. You're preaching to the choir on that one.
But you know what, John? If I had gone to University of Texas, which I could have transferred in my second semester, but I stayed, my life would have never been this way. I'm a big believer of everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. I just am such a big believer in that. So if I had gone anywhere else, it would have not come out. It wouldn't have been the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did move around quite a bit. You lived in Denver for a while. Then you went out to LA. Ended up, you met your husband, then you moved back out east. And once you got out east, you started a promotional staffing agency. So for the listeners that maybe you're not familiar with what that business is, could you fill us in a little bit on what a promotional staffing agency does?
Yes. So when I lived in LA for a couple of years, people would pass out. I found out a way to make extra money was you could work for different marketing companies and pass out samples. So at festivals, you could pass out Lever 2000 hand wipes. You know, that was like my first job, cereal samples. So I did that in LA for a little while just to make extra money. And when I moved to the East Coast, I started my own staffing company and realized I could do that on my own. So we staffed marketing events throughout the country. So it's essentially marketing companies are hired by, we'll say Unilever, mm-hmm. and then we provide the brand ambassadors and the people to go out in the field and promote the product. And I have like 6 employees. It was very successful. I did that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and got burned. You know, it's hard. It's a lot of work.
Well, in 2015, you returned to doing some acting because you had done some acting when you were out in LA, correct? With some modeling and some of the commercials and TV.
Yeah.
So you what made you decide to go back to it?
I always was interested. I don't know. I wanted to see if I could do it.
Okay.
And I had taken acting classes out in LA and I always enjoyed doing that. I thought I'd be okay at it. So I just wanted to see if I could do it. And my husband was like, okay. My kids were older. So mm-hmm. I found CPM Talent. My manager believed in me and got me in the door for auditions and kind of went from there. I mean, I had to work really hard, but.
How do you prepare for an audition, if I may ask?
I hate auditions. Very nerve-wracking for me. I get very nervous. Sometimes you could have like a few lines and that can be really hard. For me to prepare, if it's a lot of lines of memorization, putting them on index cards, I feel if I have to memorize the lines first and then I can play around with what the character is going to be like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like once it's memorized, then I can play. But it's also preparing to get in that room and do the best that you can and not mess up. And I've messed up.
Well, you know, I mean, I assume much like anything else, you know, as you mentioned before, things happen for a reason,
mm-hmm.
you know, so maybe if you don't get that role, maybe you weren't meant to have that role, but maybe there's the next one that you get.
It's so true. And I see things all the time that I've auditioned for and the person that's doing it is great. You're like, oh, well, that makes sense. I can see why they booked that person over me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, if I can ask about a couple of those appearances, you had a role or part, if you will, on Elementary, the mm-hmm. CBS show. So what was the experience like being on like a major CBS network show?
That was my first big booking. That was awesome. And I was so nervous. And Johnny Lee Miller, I love from Trainspotting. And, mm-hmm. you know, a hit show. And I showed up and I had to stand in a little closet with him. They had built the set out. And we had to stand in this little, it was literally like a broom closet. I was nose to nose with him and I had 2 words. And I'm like, just don't F up the words. I just have 2 words. And I remember saying to him, like, I started sweating thinking about it. First of all, I love him. And then I go, oh my God, my armpits are really sweating. That's what I said to him while we're standing this close, you know, in a closet before I go out for my lines. Cause he comes out after me and he goes, oh, that's nice. No, I wasn't cool. But it was the first time I had a stand-in because when I was leaving to go take a break, when you know they have, I walked by this woman and I'm like, you look just like me. And she goes, I'm your stand-in. I'm like, I have a stand-in? I've arrived. And now she gets things that I don't get. So we, her name's Regina Schneider, and she will get something that I'll audition for. And we're on something together right now. So we cross paths. You always cross paths with people.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So you also had some roles in some short films, and mm-hmm. I'd like to just maybe touch base with on them and maybe have you give a quick summary of it. The first one was The Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was the tale on that one?
Well, I realized that I needed to add to my reel, and NYU has an amazing film school. Obviously, everybody knows that. So these short films were NYU films. So Jordan Rowe directed it, and it was about a musician. This guy is a really good musician, and I play the mom because he tells me he's going to take off with his band and go be a musician. So, yeah, it was a good film, and it was done well, and Jordan was super sweet to work with.
And then another one that I wanted to ask about is called When Father Went Biking, which mm-hmm. that is a very unusual title. So I cannot wait to hear the synopsis of this tale.
That one, that was entered into a ton of short film festivals. It was selected for a lot. I played a woman who is battling cancer and is also the caregiver to my dad who has dementia. So it was me and my dad, and I wore a bald wig, a bald cap, and I had a wig. So I liked that role because I got to look super haggard and tired in it. That was another NYU film. But that director did not communicate with the cast or the crew after he shot that. So it took a lot for us to even get clips of that. He like just really? Disappeared and didn't communicate with anyone. So that, you can't do that.
No. I'm just going to ask real quick about that role with When Father Went Biking.
Mm-hmm.
What experiences did you draw from to get into the role and to be prepared for the role? Did you pull stuff from your own relationship with your father or friends and other family members or what?
Yeah, my dad, because of his glioblastoma, experienced dementia. So mm-hmm. I didn't have to pull that hard, you know, for okay. it because it was literally happening to me at the time.
Okay.
So to be a caregiver, not have a lot of money, and to be battling cancer also, I just couldn't even imagine what, you know, my character was going through. So yeah, that's where I was able mm-hmm. to draw from that.
Well, the next one that I'd like to talk about is from the genre of horror called A Place in Hell. So could you tell us a little bit about that film project?
That was one of my first roles too. That was like okay. a little part, like an audition, and David Borbor directed that. And I was watching it. I was able to see it on Amazon. I don't know. It was like, I couldn't watch all of it because it was like really, some of it was pretty dark, but I played a woman whose daughter has disappeared. So again, you know, I have a daughter, so I was able to, it was the first time though I was ready to shoot. I got all emotional. I had listened to music. I was ready to come on the set, and they warn you, hey, just because you're ready doesn't mean everybody else is. So I was like, you know, you want to be like, okay, I'm ready. And then they're all, you know, yeah. cuts it around with the cameras, and then your moment's over and you're like, oh, now I have to cry again. But I was already at that place. So now I remember, I know now to save that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until you know you're about to have to do it. Because when you cry, when you practice too hard before, then it's hard to pull that emotion up sometimes.
Do you like the genre of horror?
I do. I really love it. Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I love Halloween and the old movies. Yeah, I like to scare myself a little bit.
Oh, do you like Halloween, the holiday that's coming up here in a few days?
No, because I hate dressing up. It's so annoying to me. But
really?
I cannot. And my husband is so into it, and he always wins the Halloween costume at our parties that we go to. He loves it. And it's just such a pain in the ass for me. I just hate dressing up. But I enjoy people that do. I'm not judging them. I'm lazy. You're lazy. It's a lot of work.
Well, yeah, I find once you get it, once you make the decision of what you're going to go as, that's the hardest part for me personally.
Do you like to dress up?
I don't mind for Halloween. No.
That's cute.
You know, over the last couple of days, Facebook keeps reminding me of all the great Halloween costumes I've had over the last few years, you know, so.
Yeah, they like to remind you. It's so cute, though. I'm sure it brings back good memories.
Yeah, it certainly does. So the last project that I want to talk about is a film called Snow Babies. Yeah. And I read a review, if you will, that says that it's compared to a young adolescent Requiem for a Dream. I about had a heart attack because I like Requiem for a Dream. And I'm like, good gosh, if it's like that, wow, this has got to be a film you got to watch. So tell us a little bit about it, if you will.
Yeah, sure. It's Snow Babies, S-N-O Babies. And it's about a 16-year-old heroin addict who's an honor student, straight A student. She's my daughter. Her name's Katie Kelly's the actress that plays her. And I have no idea. My husband and I have no idea that our daughter is a heroin addict. And it tracks their movements and how they got addicted and her best friend and the drugs that they're doing, and unbeknownst to teachers and parents. And the writer, Mike Walsh, and the director, Bridget Smith, really interviewed teen addicts and got their stories and incorporated that into the film. So what you're seeing is stuff that was told to us that the teenagers did to hide the heroin, how they shot up. So it's not gratuitous at all. It's like so factual and it's so upsetting to see. It's hard for me to even watch, but it's so important for us to take away the stigma of drug addiction.
Yeah.
You know, it can happen anywhere to anybody at any time, at any age, any level of, you know, what the people make. I mean, it's just, as we know now, we're learning more about it.
If I may ask, did the characters in the film, did they start off with a legitimate issue? Like, oh, I got like, I have a friend whose brother got hurt, started on the painkillers. And then that kind of led to a dependency that then therefore the pills are too expensive. Heroin's a little bit cheaper. Was that kind of a common story that was told to the director and the writer?
Yeah, that was a lot. And then in the case of Snow Baby, she tried, a guy got her to try an opiate, you know, a pill. Mm-hmm. Like, mom, it'll change your life. And that kind of started her addiction. But yeah, a lot of it was from injuries. We had actual families come on to the set because they wanted to support the film so much. And they came onto the set as extras. There's one really hard scene that we had to shoot and the family was there and they buried their son who was a Marine, 21-year-old, handsome guy, Marine. And he was injured while he was in service, while he was in active duty, and got addicted to heroin and died. I mean, the families that came on set that we met, it was just heartbreaking. But that's how much they cared about the film and how much they want to help everybody else. So that sounds a lot.
Where can folks check out the film?
FandangoNow.com. They can go on to Amazon.com, Vudu, Apple TV. There's different ways to stream it. It was supposed to be in the theaters, but because of COVID. So they can stream it those ways. And it has a great soundtrack, good musicians. And we just hope that it helps people. And there's hope at the end. So we want to give people hope also that you can recover.
There you go. And just as a side note, for any listeners out there that has no idea, when I reference Rec Room for a Dream, it does not have a happy ending. No. So therefore, that's why I was like, whoa, okay. So have you seen that film?
Yes, it's been a long time. Jennifer Connelly, I love her.
Yes.
I probably haven't seen that movie in 15, 16 years.
I mean, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, I remember that not being something I wanted to see again. It's like Trainspotting, which I loved also. Because there's some films you see it and you're like, okay, got the message. Fantastic movie. I'm good. It's not like an Airplane or something that you can just keep watching over and over again.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. What are some of your films that you could watch over and over again?
Airplane.
Well, besides Airplane.
Napoleon Dynamite is one of my favorite. Do you like Napoleon Dynamite? Have you seen that?
I like Napoleon Dynamite. It has a particular charm to it. I feel bad, though, that I feel like Napoleon himself, John Heder, kind of got typecast with that.
I'll be typecast. I mean, take it and run with it. Listen, if it's successful, go with it.
Very true. Very true.
Hard enough to get a booking like that. Like, stick to it.
Well, do you have any upcoming projects that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, I have Halston, H-A-L-S-T-O-N. That'll be on Netflix. That's a Ryan Murphy production. He's doing a lot of great stuff. Ratchet and American Horror Story. And Ewan McGregor starring in that. And that's about, it's a true story about the 70s iconic fashion designer, Halston. And I I play a part in that show. I'm very excited. It's like a really big deal for me to work with some of the people I'm working with.
Okay. Any release date on that yet, or?
It says on IMDb 2021. So I don't know if that'll be spring or what. I'm not sure.
All right. Sure.
Well, no, because Ryan Murphy does a great job of talking about what he has coming up.
Sure.
The producer, yeah, he's so talented.
Mm-hmm. You have any other projects besides Halston?
Yes, and I can't talk about it. That's out there too, but I have an NDA, so I can't talk about it. They had to sign something, and I'm like, all right, I'll keep it quiet. But, okay. But that project I'm super excited about too. The script's amazing, and that's a film.
Excellent. Well, where could folks maybe keep tabs on you for when this news is broke and you can actually talk about them and whatnot?
Talk to you about it.
There you go. Yeah, most definitely. Do you have a website? Do you have social media that you'd like to plug real quick?
Yeah, I need to be better about my social media. But Shannon, Shannan Wilson.com. And then you can follow me on Twitter. If you Google Shannan Wilson, my songs will pop up and all the stuff that I do pop up. So you can find me that way.
Gotcha. So we've already covered that you're a Houston sports fan, but now that you're living near Philadelphia, do you have a penchant for any of the Philadelphia sports teams?
Yes, I'm wearing an Eagle shirt right now. I can't see.
Oh, okay.
Although we're having a little bit of a hard time this season, Carson Wentz. But I was living here when they won the World Series, and I was stuck in Philadelphia. I couldn't get out of Philly because everybody's going crazy. And Philadelphia is so fun. Just the fans are so crazy. I mean, I would never take my kids to an Eagles game when I can again, because it's so wild. I mean, have you been to an Eagles game?
I have not, but I remember the stories of Veterans Stadium having a circuit court in the basement of it so that people were arrested. They just took them right downstairs and I've heard the stories.
Yeah. We went to a GNR concert at the old stadium. My husband and I did a long time ago, and Axl Rose decided not to come out on stage. And there was a full riot. And when I say riot, like, people were throwing things everywhere. Like, Philly people do not mess around. Mm-hmm. And the fans, we were listening to an Eagles game the other day when football started up again. And they have a boo machine. And I think they just have it specifically for the Eagles games. Because, you know, Eagles fans boo. They'll be like, Carson, you suck. And they had like booing going. And my husband goes, oh my God, how funny is it that it's like somebody's pushing a boo button? Because it's not an Eagles game. There's not some boos.
Oh, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
Who are you rooting for the World Series?
You know what? Honestly, I'm not a big baseball fan.
No, you're football?
I really am not. No, I'm a huge hockey nerd.
Yeah.
That's mine. So, It is. But I got to be honest, I despise the Flyers. So,
oh, you do. That's
okay.
Who's your team?
I'm a Pittsburgh guy.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
you know.
I don't even know how the Flyers, well, they kind of went a little far this year, but then they didn't.
A little bit, but
not enough.
But so nonetheless, though, Shannan, let's run them down one more time. Website, where can folks follow you there on your website and social media real quick?
ShannanWilson.com and Shannan N. Wilson on Instagram.
There you go. Shannan, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you very, very much for spending some time with me today, talking about your projects and your career and whatnot.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back in a few moments to wrap things up. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversations with two wonderful actresses, Liz Priestley and Shannan Wilson, talking about the craft of acting, their projects, and a whole lot more. I hope you really did enjoy this episode. And you know what? You can let me know if you did enjoy it, or maybe even if you didn't enjoy it. And let me run down those avenues where you can contact me. You can always shoot me an email. My email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Or you can leave me a message through the Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and look for @PVDcast. You can drop me a line through Instagram if you want. Also, just look for @PVDcast. Or you can find me on Twitter. And my personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. And let me run down the different places where you can find this great podcast, just in case you want to tell some folks about it. Obviously, pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, is the best place to go, but it's pretty much available through all those major podcasting outlets like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Stitcher Radio, etc., etc. Just put PVDcast in the search engine of your favorite podcasting place, and you're sure to find it. And once you've listened to an episode, please rate and review. That helps me out in the algorithm. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode. And please let some folks know that you enjoy the PVDcast. I would really, really appreciate it. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2021.